Today on episode number 514 of the Teaching in Higher Ed podcast, Transformative Education, Lessons from More Than 50 Years of Teaching with Joe Hoyle.
Produced by Innovate Learning, Maximizing Human Potential.
Welcome to this episode of Teaching in Higher Ed. I'm Bonnie Stachowiak, and this is the space where we explore the art and science of being more effective at facilitating learning. We also share ways to improve our productivity approaches so we can have more peace in our lives and be even more present for our students. Joe Hoyle is back on Teaching in Higher Ed. He's an associate professor of accounting in the Robbins School of Business at the University of Richmond. Joe is also an accounting teaching fellow presently. He's currently completing his 53rd year of teaching. In 2015, he was the first recipient of the Cook Prize for undergraduate teaching presented by the American Accounting Association. In 2006, he was named one of 22 favorite professors in the U.S. by Business Week. In 2007, he was named the Virginia Professor of the Year by the Council of Advancement and Support in Education. In 2012, he was named one of 9 favorite professors in the U.S. by Bloomberg Businessweek. In 2013, he was one of several college teachers highlighted in the book Cheating Lessons by James Lang. And James Lang, in fact, is who connected me with Joe Hoyle many years ago. And I'm so grateful for the ways in which James Lang has connected me with amazing people like Joe. Joe is the co-author of 2 textbooks, Advanced Accounting, currently in its 15th edition, and Financial Accounting, currently in its 3rd edition. He has written a free online book called Tips and Thoughts on Improving the Teaching Process in College, a Personal Diary. He's written over 240 entries for his teaching blog, which has more than 735,000 page views. He's co-authored an article in the Chronicle of Higher Education about his experiences in joining a government accounting course with a course on Victorian literature. And his new book, which we'll be reflecting on today, Transformative Education, is available as a free download. The link will be in the show notes. And it's based on Joe's more than 50 years as a college professor. And his goal in writing the book comes from the words of Nelson Mandela: education is the most powerful weapon which you can use to change the world. Joe Hoyle, welcome back to Teaching in Higher Ed after all of these years.
I'm delighted to be back. I remember with so much fondness our first conversation. I don't know if we were doing it differently, but I remember pacing around and talking to you and thinking that we all just talked for hours. I loved it.
Yes, and James Lang was so generous and kind to connect us and had such good things to say about you. I knew I was in for a treat to talk to you way back then. And after reading your book, which for listeners is a free resource we'll be talking about throughout the conversation, but anyone who wants to pick up and learn more from Joe, you'll have an opportunity to do this. I really enjoy reading book dedications or, you know, those front parts where you get a little personal glimpse. And I would love to start our conversation with having you tell us a little bit about Sarah and the impact she's had on your life.
Well, Sarah and I have been married for 53 and a half years. And I have taught for 52 and a half years. And so I always tell everybody that the two pillars of my life, the two pillars that have kind of served as my foundation, has been Sarah, who's put up with me all these years in teaching, which I certainly love to do. And so over the years, she's just been so helpful to provide the resources I need. And one of the stories I always tell people is that after we'd been married for 50 years, she kind of informed me that she was going to quit cooking because she'd done it for 50 years and hadn't liked it. And I had a choice at that point. I could either starve to death or buy stock in restaurants and just go to restaurants the right time, or I could actually learn to cook. And so we started using HelloFresh, and I have found that cooking is fascinating. So every night, the deal is I do all the cooking, and she cleans up afterwards. And it has just been so much fun to learn something so incredibly new and different for me and to be productive. I like the idea of being productive, and cooking gives me that chance. So I don't get quite as much work done as I used to do, because now instead of that hour of writing a book or making a lesson plan, I'm actually in my kitchen chopping up broccoli or something like that. I'm 76 years old, and if you had told me 50 years ago that I would be having so much fun in my job and in my life at 76, I wouldn't have believed it. And I think things like taking up cooking at 76 was a pretty good idea, to tell you the truth.
There's another person who's had a major impact on you, and also another restaurant. By the way, today's episode is not being sponsored by either of these restaurants. So Taco Bell, tell us about Taco Bell and another person who's had a huge impact in your life.
Yeah, Paul Kleitman was my very best friend here on campus. And I tend to be very exuberant and very just say whatever comes to my mind. Paul was always very, very thoughtful. And so years and years and years ago, without any real planning, we started going to Taco Bell once a week. And we went to Taco Bell because Paul had worked at Taco Bell when he was in high school, and he was such a loyal person. The fact that they had given him a job in high school just made him a lifelong Taco Bell person. So we would go usually every Tuesday, and for 1 hour, we would sit there and we would talk about things. And I could always ask Paul what he thought about something, and it would be this long pause. And he would eventually come up with such a wonderful idea. So we discussed for years every single aspect of teaching. How do we get students to do the work? How do we test students? How do we motivate students? How do we make classes easier or harder? Yeah, we just talked, we also talked about politics and religion and baseball games and all kinds of stuff. But almost every week we talked about teaching. And I always said, and I said this in the textbook, and in the teaching book, that one of the things, if you want to become a better teacher, find someone who has an interest in teaching like you do. And every week or two, get away from campus or get away from your office and just sit and have a cup of coffee or a taco and talk about teaching. Anything I have to tell you today is going to be less important than sitting around with a person that you know and talking about your students and how they do. And Paul was about 12 years younger than me, and unfortunately one night he had a heart attack and died. And it's been, just such a emptiness in my professional life and my personal life, that the person that I knew so well and that helped me so much to think about teaching. I think that idea of thinking about it is something I stress a lot. It's been difficult. It does teach you, though, that life has an end to it. And if you're going to make the best of your life, and Paul really did make the best of his life, you better do it now. Don't put it off. You never know what's going to happen.
You didn't share that in the book, and I'm so sorry to hear of that loss of that friendship, and imagine how close the two of you were. You were reminding me a little bit of the expression that I've learned from guests of this podcast who talk about writing is thinking and thinking is writing. And I was thinking about thinking is teaching and teaching is thinking, the way in which you just these, and it's really probably teaching too. Teaching is learning and learning is teaching, the way that those two things intersect in your life. If we were to come visit you in your office, we would see a cartoon taped to your office wall. Can you, since this is an audio podcast, can you describe this cartoon for us? And what it tells us about teaching?
I'm a big believer in that you need to recharge your batteries. Teaching can get to be a tough job. Students don't always do what you want them to do. Your administrators do not always do what you want them to do. And so I always tell people, take care of yourself as a teacher. So I have a Charlie Brown cartoon, a Peanuts cartoon by Charles Schulz. And in fact, it's right above where I'm sitting right now. And Charlie Brown and Linus are walking down the street. And Charlie Brown talks about the fact of, I'll never get this quote exactly right. I thought the purpose of life was to be happy, help other people, and make the world a better place. And Linus looks back at him and says, yeah, that's true, Charlie Brown, but we can't all be teachers. And I just think that's such a wonderful thing to keep in mind. You know, the goal of life, to be happy, to help others, to make the world a better place, I don't think you can ever underestimate how valuable the job of teacher is. And one of the things when I wrote Transformative Education, which is the book we're kind of talking about, one of the things I wanted people to think about was that if you're a teacher, you have what I believe is the most valuable job in the world. And that's such a wonderful opportunity. I get people all the time that say, I wish I had the chance to work with people. As a teacher, we all work with people and we do it all the time. And we have that opportunity every day to make a difference in their life. So whenever I get kind of discouraged, and this is a job where you do get discouraged. When I get discouraged, that cartoon from Charlie Brown about, yeah, but we can't all be teachers. But yes, we are teachers. We have that. And I just think that's something worth remembering. And I always try to stress that to people.
Throughout the book, you use an elaborate Rube Goldberg machine as analogous to good teaching. For those who aren't familiar with them, what is a Rube Goldberg machine? And have you ever attempted to create one of your own?
The answer is, and I may have the history of this wrong, but in, I think it was the 1920s and 1930s, there was a person who drew cartoons for the papers named Rube Goldberg, I believe. And Rube Goldberg, there would be a task like turning on a light switch or making a cup of coffee. And so he would draw this elaborate cartoon where you set fire to a bonfire and that burned the cord and that cord turned off something, it hit a seesaw and everything. And all of a sudden the light switch came on. And so they become more fascinating. I myself have not built a Rube Goldberg machine, but my younger son teaches high school in Norfolk, Virginia. And one of the assignments he gives to his students is to build a Rube Goldberg machine. And then they videotape them all working. So it's fascinating because it stimulates creativity. So you'll have one student roll a bowling ball down a gutter, and that bowling ball will hit something, and that will do something else, and that will do something else. The point of it in using it in the book was a lot of people talk to me, and they kind of are looking for simple answers. And they say, what's the magic pill I could do in order to become a great teacher? And my comment is teaching, I have about 70 students per semester, which is, for my size school, is relatively normal. I have a friend who teaches 848 students a semester. I have a friend who teaches about 15 students a semester. So it varies by who you're talking with. But great teaching is terribly, terribly complicated. You take things like communication. You take things like testing. You take things. This morning, I had an email from a professor in Alabama who wanted to talk about the problems he had had with makeup tests. Students who were supposed to take a test and they would call up 30 minutes before the test and say, I've got a cold or my uncle died or whatever. And so there's just 1,000 different little components to being a good teacher. And so my idea was that if you really wanted to be a great teacher, you had to realize that teaching was very elaborate and very complex. And the only way I could think to describe that was to talk about Rube Goldberg machines, where 18 different things had to happen before you got your cup of coffee. And so if you want a student to learn something about Macbeth, or you want a student to learn something about quantum mechanics, it's not just that you walk in and say, let me tell you about Macbeth, or let me tell you about quantum mechanics. There's just an elaborate process where you prepare them for class, and then you work with them after class, and then you test them, and then I just thought that for me, and again, so many of this stuff is just, this is the way I feel about it. For me, it was exciting to think about teaching as being so elaborate and so many different variables and so many, going back to my conversations with Paul Kleitman, we have had conversations for 40 years because teaching is so very complex. And no two students are the same, and no 2 days are the same. And so I wanted some way to let people know that I was going to look at teaching in not just one or two ways, but in dozens of ways. And there was all kinds of places in those dozens of ways that they could become better teachers.
You spoke early in our conversation about learning to cook. And I know that's not the only new skill you have attempted to acquire in recent years. Tell us a little bit about this process of learning something new as it relates to taking Tai Chi classes, taking photography classes. What have those two things been like for you?
Yeah, I learned real early that it feels different when you're the teacher. When I was a student, it was so weird to walk into class and feel stupid. And a teacher would call on me and I would give an answer and he or she would roll their eyes and say, oh, no, that's wrong. And I would feel stupid. And that felt bad. And then once I became the teacher, all of a sudden I was the smart one in the room. And it was easy to lose empathy for what students felt like. So very early, I started trying to take as many different classes as I possibly could outside of school. And I always try to make sure it's something that I'm not good at. And there's lots of things I'm not good at. So I've taken ballroom dancing. I've taken jewelry making. I've taken classes in Russian culture. But two quick ones. For the last 5 or 6 years, I've taken Tai Chi. And if you have people in your audience who are, let's say, over 50 and want to be teaching for another 50 years, I would highly recommend Tai Chi. It's both good for you physically and it's good for you mentally. And I have a wonderful teacher. And after 5 years, I am still incredibly bad at it. In fact, 2 days ago, I had a Tai Chi class and I was working as hard as I possibly could to get the movements correct. And he would come over and he would very gently and kindly move my hand or have me stand a different way, or he would show me something I was doing incorrectly. And it's just so helpful to go, well, I'm not the smart one in the room on this. And having a good teacher who's kind to you is just very, very important. And you go back to school then and you walk up in front of a class and it makes you a better teacher because you remember then what it's like not to be the expert of these classes. And I tell a story in Transformative Education. I was taking a class in large format photography. And so there were five of us in the class. And so we were going to do this on Saturday and Sunday. And so Saturday, we were going to take two pictures and the teacher was going to go home that evening and develop them and bring them back for the class on Sunday so we could discuss them. And I really wanted to learn large format photography. I just thought it'd be fascinating to do. You get under the hood and you're pretending you're taking pictures of Abraham Lincoln or something like that. And so we all took our two pictures and we all sent the negatives home with the teacher. And when he came back the next day, he only had four, there were five of us, and he only had four packs of pictures because one person in that room had messed up and their pictures had not worked. And so he told us when he walked in, I didn't write anybody's name. So I'll hold up the pictures and you tell me if they're yours. And so he holds up a picture, holds up a set of pictures and one person takes them and he holds up another picture and another person takes them. And pretty soon we're down to three people and there's only two sets of pictures left and he holds up another one and it's not me. And we're down to two. It's musical chairs. There's one chair left or one pack of photos left and there's two people left. And so everybody in the room knows that one of these two people got it right and one of these two people got it wrong. So one of these people is the dumb one in the room. And I'm sitting there and I'm going, oh, Lord, please don't let it be me. I don't want to be the stupid one in the room. And so he holds up the last two pictures and they're not mine. I'm the one who failed. I didn't get it right. Now, it was totally unimportant. This was just a weekend class on large format photography. Nobody really cared, except I did. I was the one who had failed. And all I had done was to put one thing in backwards. Simple mistake. Anybody could have done it, but I really felt like I had failed. And so I come back to the University of Richmond, where I teach, the next day on Monday, and I had a different feeling for those poor students who were not doing well in my class. And I just think that's good. I think that all teachers, if you go through the hallways, it's not uncommon for teachers to complain about the poorer students. And sometimes I think we lose our empathy by being the smart ones in the room. So I always tell, when I give presentations, I always tell people, one of the things I would suggest is go out and take a class where you're going to be bad, because it will help you remember what it's like to be a student. And so I have had a lot of fun over the years, but I've never done any of those very well. But Tai Chi is wonderful. Strongly recommend that, but find a good teacher, find a kind teacher. That's helpful too.
You invite us throughout your work to set a 5% improvement goal each year. And I consider you to be a numbers man. You're not going to be, you know, as skilled at accounting as you are without having a preciseness when using numbers. Why not 1%? Why not 10%? Where did you come up with 5% as a worthy goal to pursue?
You know, I think one of the things to discourage people is they think they have to become better immediately. And so whenever, and I talk with lots of people about teaching, and there's always this, I can't be a great teacher. I can't be a good teacher. And I go, back up. Let's not even try for those goals. Let's just try to be better by this time next year. And so many years ago, when I gave one of my very first presentations, I was trying to think of some way to explain that to people, to say, listen, this is, the goal is not to be great tomorrow. The goal is to be great, you know, in 40 years or something. And so I simply wanted to be able to tell people to make progress. So I was giving a presentation. This was actually a presentation at a small high school. And I suggested to them, oh, they were such nice people. They had so many wonderful questions. I suggested to them, this came out almost randomly. I suggested that they create a 5% club. And the 5% club was they would get together every 2 or 3 months or once a year or whatever and talk about what they had tried to do to become better as teachers. And I just threw out kind of randomly 5% as a goal that would eventually get you to greatness, but didn't seem to overwhelm people. If I walked into, you know, to any class and said, I want you to be 80% better by this time next year, well, nobody would do that. That would just be so discouraging to people. But you and I and everybody else can get 5% better. So my thought was that they would create a 5% goal. And I've actually made this suggestion in other presentations, and get back together in a year and everybody talk about what they did to get 5% better. Now, of course, my thought is if you shoot for 5%, you can get more than 5%. But at least 5% isn't an overwhelming number. And what I always tell people is, if you're 5% better this year and you're 5% better next year, you will be absolutely amazed by how quickly you become a great teacher. It doesn't take nearly as long, but you got to do it a little bit at a time. Probably talk more about that over the years than any other single thing I've ever talked about, that idea of gradual improvement. In fact, I talk in the book about the three E's: experiment, evaluate, and evolve. The three E's, but they always start with experiment. And I always say the three E's equal 5% improvement. Experiment, evaluate, evolve, get to 5% improve.
It can be so discouraging for us when we go through the course evaluations, and we could have, I'm sure, many, many conversations at Taco Bell just about that one topic alone. But one of the things that you stress is about the stories, the power of the stories that we tell ourselves. And tell us a bit about listening to the audiobook of Wild, a memoir by Cheryl Strayed.
I am a storyteller. And there's probably no story that I like better than this one, to tell you the truth. One of my goals is to read 25 books a year. I have trouble sitting down and reading books because I'm busy and I just don't. So about 40 years ago, I started listening to audiobooks. And I guess if I've listened to 25 books a year for 40 years, I've listened to about 1,000 audiobooks over that time. So I was driving to campus. This must have been about 7 years ago. And I was listening to the book Wild by Cheryl Strayed. And if you've not read the book, it's a great book. She's having a very difficult time in her life. And she wants to do something. Her mother has died. And she wants to do something just to almost to purify herself. So she decides to walk the Pacific Crest Trail, which is 1,100 miles. In my part of the world, I'm here in the East Coast, we have the Appalachian Trail. Well, the Pacific Crest Trail is the equivalent on the West Coast. Now, she has never been a hiker. She doesn't know anything about this, which seems just to me to be insane. That she would start out in a purification by trying to walk through a fairly rugged terrain, 1,100 miles. So she gets to the day before she's going to start. She has the wrong boots, no less, just to make it difficult. And as you can imagine, she loses her nerve. The night before, it's like she's just not going to do it. And she tells herself, so I'm driving along, listening to this book, which is read by Cheryl Strayed, which makes it even better. I mean, she's reading her own book. And she says a quote, and I won't get the quote exactly right, but the quote is this: fear, to a certain extent, is a product of the stories we tell ourselves. So I decided to tell myself a different story than the one women typically hear. Not exactly the right quote, but close enough. I was so taken aback by that one sentence that I did something I had never in my life done. I pulled my car over to the side of the road. I hit rewind. I found a pencil and a piece of paper, and I copied it down as she said it the second time I heard it. I, of all the sentences I've heard in the last 10 years, that was probably the one that to me was the most impactful. Fear, to a certain extent, is simply a product of the stories we tell ourselves. So I decided to tell myself a different story. Now, you can change the word fear to hate, to annoyance, to a lot of different things. I want to tell myself stories that will get me to where I want to go. Whenever I'm upset at things, and I'm a human being, I get upset like everybody else, I try to think about the stories that I'm telling myself that's getting me to that point. For example, I'm 76 years old. It's easy when you're 76 years old to tell yourself a lot of elderly stories. I'm falling apart. I'm, you know, about ready to go, I hate to say die, but I'm 76 years old. And whenever I get in the mood of telling myself those kinds of stories, I'm trying to say, listen, you got to tell yourself some other stories than this, or you're never going to make it. Now, the reason I put that in the book, other than the fact I love that quote, is that I talk to teachers all the time, and the first thing they start telling me is negative stories about themselves. I don't lecture well. I don't give good tests. I don't know how to grade well. I don't know how to motivate students. The stories that most teachers tell themselves are absolutely going to hold them back. So you have plenty of listeners on this podcast, and I would suspect that most of them, if not all of them, are teachers. The first thing I would suggest to any of them is think about the stories that you're telling yourself that are holding you back from that 5% improvement. Because I'm betting, unless you're an odd person, that there are stories about your students, stories about yourself, stories about your school that are holding you back. So your success or your lack of success is a product of the stories you're telling yourself. So tell yourself different stories. And I just think that's such an important message to hear. I've always wanted to write Cheryl Strayed and tell her how much I appreciate that line, but I suspect she's heard that before, to tell you the truth. It's almost like a religious experience for me, that idea of what are the stories you're telling yourself that are holding you back from being the kind of successful teacher that you can be. Oh, I'm glad you brought that up. That to me is just a wonderful sentence. I just love that sentence.
Before we get to the recommendations segment, there's one more story I'd love to have you share. And this one is from the 1992 movie, A League of Their Own. And this one, for those not familiar, starred Tom Hanks, Gina Davis, Rosie O'Donnell, and one that I had forgotten, Joe. I don't know how I forgot this. Madonna was in this movie, and somehow I forgot that from having watched it when it came out in the early 90s. And it has to do with a story that so many of us can tell ourselves of just, it's too hard. It's too hard. What does this movie have to tell us about how we might consider that story we tell ourselves?
Madonna in a baseball uniform was an interesting part of that movie, to tell you the truth. I remember being at that movie. I didn't remember it was 1992. And they got to the end and I thought, oh, this is great. I wish I had a piece of paper and a pencil so I could write this down. But luckily it's on YouTube and you can watch this. So it's during the World War II, women formed a baseball league because so many of the men were fighting in the war. And so there was a women's baseball league that played excellent baseball and drew in fairly good sized crowds and was popular for several years. And Gina Davis, the actress, is the star of her team. She's the catcher. She's great. But she's married and her husband's back, I think, in Oregon, and she's out running around the country playing baseball, and it's been a long season and they're tired and they don't get paid very much. And Tom Hanks is the manager of the team, and he's funny and he's a baseball fanatic and he's funny and interesting. And so they get to almost the end of the season and Gina Davis just gets tired of it. And so she calls her husband and tells him to come get her. And so one day, the husband drives up and Gina Davis packs her bags and goes to get in the car. And so Tom Hanks comes roaring out of, I think they were at a hotel or something. He comes roaring out of the hotel and says, "Where are you going?" And she says, "I'm going home." And then she makes a comment like, "It just got too hard." And I agree with her. It had been hard. And then Tom Hanks looks at her and says, and I won't get the exact words correct, but he says, "It's supposed to be hard. If it wasn't hard, everybody would do it." And then the famous words I love so much, "It's the hard that makes it great." And the reason I put that in the book, and you can figure this out for yourself, teaching is hard work. Every student is demanding of your time and energy. Teaching is hard. And I have people come to me all the time and want me to tell them how to make it easier. The answer is, it's supposed to be hard. If it wasn't hard, everybody could be a great teacher. It's the hard part of it that makes it so great. I'm obviously obsessed or a fanatic about teaching. And so when I think about it, I want everybody to be a great teacher. But I don't want to make it easier for them. When I write a book, the book doesn't start off with, here's 15 ways to make teaching easy. Teaching is hard. It's a Rube Goldberg machine with lots of different complexities to it. That you have to understand. But when you get good at it, when you change a student's life, when you make a student a better person, it's the hard part of it that really makes it great. The movie is A League of Its Own. You can see it, I'm sure, on Netflix or Amazon Prime or something like that. Great movie. Madonna in that baseball uniform is fascinating. But toward the end, that line will just touch you, I believe.
This is the time in the show where we each get to share our recommendations. I have two things I'd like to recommend today. Before I do so, I want to quickly remind people who may not have been listening for a while, or even the person I'm married to sometimes doesn't understand the rules I instill in myself for recommendations. I try not to recommend the same thing twice, although I have failed at that once that I'm aware of. I suspect probably in all these years, I've maybe done it more than once. But it is totally fair game for me to recommend something that someone else has recommended on the show, because how great is that, that you get to hear about all these amazing things that you might try? So I consider that to be totally fair game. So I'm going to recommend two things that have been recommended before on the show, and just so grateful that people do share. And by the way, other people, they don't have to follow the rules, because it's fun when somebody recommends the same book maybe five times. By that time, I go, this must be a really good book I should pick up. So the first thing I want to recommend was actually a song shared by Will Hennessy on episode 499. He mentioned it being folk music. The artist is John Craigie, and it's a live recording of him singing a song called Dissect the Bird. And it's all about kind of how if you overthink things and you were to dissect this bird, then you've basically not enabled the song, the bird to continue to sing its song, because you just basically removed the ability for it to do that. He's so funny in the live recording. In fact, I've started to listen to more of his music, and I love his live recordings because he really interacts with the audience and is a really funny guy. So some of the lyrics are quite comical. I love when we can get glimpses inside of people's heads and just see the humanity in one another. So that was a fun one for me to listen to. And thank you, Will, for that recommendation back on that episode. And the second thing I'd like to recommend, I'm pretty sure Dave, my husband, has recommended before on the show, and that is a photo frame. I received a photo frame from him for Christmas. It's the Aura photo frame. It's A-U-R-A, although there's lots of good ones out there. I like this one because you can really easily set it up to display photos that you have maybe in an album that you've set aside, if you have a favorites album or something like that. And you can get really precise about how often you'd like those pictures to change. I've just gone with the default setting of every 10 minutes, I'll see a new picture that'll show up, or a short video. It shortens videos down to 30 seconds, and it doesn't play the sound unless you tap on it or something, which I've not even really tried to do at this point. But it's so lovely just to be able to have. Dave helped me position it right next to my monitor when I'm working from home. And so I can just get these little glimpses and memories of things that are so special to me. And so that's my recommendation is, you know, maybe listen to a great song like Dissect the Bird, and maybe get yourself a digital photo frame where you can just enjoy those memories and set it up so you can just be reminded of things and people that are special to you. And that's all I have to recommend today. And Joe, I'm going to pass it over to you for whatever you would like to recommend.
Okay. I teach accounting. And so most people think accounting is nothing but numbers. I always, in my upper level class, I always ask my students every semester, I've done this for probably 30 years. I ask my students to write a couple paragraphs about the best book they've ever read. And I get so many fascinating responses. And I do this because, for two reasons. I do this because I want students to think about what greatness feels like. What is great? So just the idea of evaluating a book, I think, is good for them. And I also want to encourage them, even if they're accountants or whatever they turn out to be, to remember how important reading is. So the idea of thinking about what is best, I think, is just good for people. And I think it encourages them to read broader. So I think about best books myself a lot then. So I'm going to recommend what I thought was the best book I read in the last year. And this is going to be a little bit longer than just giving you the name of the story. But the best book I read last year was Tom Lake by Ann Patchett. And I didn't read, and you already know this from hearing my earlier story about Cheryl Strait, I didn't read the book. I listened to the audio tape. And the audio tape was read by Meryl Streep. And I want you to know, until you've heard Meryl Streep read Tom Lake, you have missed a real treat in your life. But I want to expand it a little bit more than that. The story about Tom Lake is built around the play Our Town. So before you read the book, go to YouTube and look up Our Town in its own YouTube, with Paul Newman, the actor, being the central figure. And take an hour and a half and watch the actual video of Paul Newman starring in Our Town. and then turn on the audio cassette or audio CD of Meryl Streep reading Our Town, and you will have two of the greatest literary experiences that you can have, because the play Our Town so well feeds in to the book that it just makes a wonderful relationship. And so as far as the best book I read last year, it wasn't just Tom Lake. It was Tom Lake read by Meryl Streep, and highly recommend that. You'll love it.
Usually I prefer to have books read by their author, but I suspect this would be one of those cases where how could you go wrong with Meryl Streep reading your book? That's incredible. That sounds amazing. I can't wait to go take a listen and watch Paul Newman in Our Town. I've not seen that production before. Thank you for these recommendations. And Joe, thank you for this tremendous resource. And we're going to have a link in the show notes to anybody who would like to download this free resource. You know, a lot of times, Joe, people talk about things being free and we say, oh, there's nothing in life that's free. And I do know you're going to have a caution for us because it's not exactly free. You do ask something of us as your readers, but truly, you don't even ask for an email address. That's usually a lot of times people, oh, you have this free download, but you want my email address and all the things. So this truly, you can go to the website, you click download and off you're running. But you do ask your readers to do something for you when we've finished. What would you like us to do after we finish reading your book?
Well, this is a 75,000 word book. This took a lot of my time. But from the day I started, I swore to myself that I was going to make this absolutely free. And the reason is that I think if we're going to save this planet, and there's a great quote from Nelson Mandela that says, education is the most powerful weapon which we can use to change the world. I think if we're going to change the world, we have to start with education. So therefore, I wanted to help people think about changing the world through better education. And I didn't want to sell it to them. I wanted to give it to them. And so from the very beginning, I really wanted to do this for free. I didn't want to hoard these ideas. And part of this comes from Ken Bain's book, What the Best College Teachers Do, where he talks about people dying and taking their knowledge with them. And I didn't want to do that. I wanted to share that. But early in the book, I tell people this. I said, I will give you this book free. But if you use anything in your class, send me an email and tell me what you did and how it worked. Because I'm curious. I'm just curious to see if it worked for you and if it didn't work for you. If you write a book, and it must be 8,000 ideas in this book, you already know that most of the ideas won't work for everybody, but a few will. And you're really, really interested. It's like sending one of your students out into the world and wondering what happened to them. I wanted to know. So yes, the book is absolutely, totally free. There is no hidden charges or anything else. It's free. But if you do use any of the ideas, my email address is on there. Send me a note and say, here's what I did and here's how it worked. And I think that's a fair trade. I really do.
Joe Hoyle, thank you so much for joining me once again for this conversation on teaching in higher ed. What a generous, joy-filled conversation.
You're a superstar. Thank you for just having all these podcasts. I can't tell you enough about how wonderful the work you do is, and I hope you continue to do this for 85 more years.
Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure getting to have this conversation with Joe Hoyle after all of these years, and such a pleasure to have you listening today. Today's episode was produced by me, Bonnie Stachowiak. It was edited by the ever-talented Andrew Kroger. Podcast production support was provided by the amazing Sierra Priest. And if you have yet to sign up for the weekly emails from Teaching in Higher Ed, you've got to head on over to teachinginhighered.com/subscribe. You'll receive the show notes from the most recent episode, but even more than that, quotable words, other recommendations that don't show up in the regular episodes. And head on over there now, and we'll look forward to having one more opportunity to stay connected throughout the week. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you next time on Teaching in Higher Ed.